no sense.
This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. This week on the Relic Radio Show, our hour of drama begins with The Whisperer. We'll hear Never the Twain, his episode from September 16th, 1951. After that, it's The Whistler and The Oriana Affair. That episode aired March 19th, 1950.
Presenting The Whisperer, starring Carlton Young. The Whisperer, a brilliant man who, losing his voice in an accident which crushed his vocal cords, worked his way deep within the crime syndicate to help destroy it from within. To the underworld, his familiar rattling hiss is the voice of authority, to be obeyed without question. Then a miracle of surgery performed by Dr. Benjamin Lee restored his natural voice, enabling him to resume his real identity. Now, as Philip Gault, aggressive young attorney, he skirts the thin edges of death, living his dual role. For as the Whisperer, he sets in motion the forces of the syndicate in Central City. Then, as Philip Gault, uses his knowledge to fight the organized network of crime which seeks to control the fate of millions in cities and towns across the nation. The only person besides Dr. Lee who knows the Whisperer's real identity is the doctor's nurse, Ellen Norris. Now she listens as Philip Gault, using his Whisperer's voice, reports back to his superiors in the syndicate.
Instructions given to Mendoza.
When he has completed the first part of his assignment, he will call you.
Where is she to be detained?
This information is being purposely withheld.
Now you're making war on women?
The syndicate makes war on anyone who gets in its way, Ellen. Step on one tentacle and the other seven converge and squeeze you to death.
Who's Patricia Folsom?
Wife of Barney Folsom, former syndicate trigger man.
Former trigger man?
Yes, he's marked for death. Come on, I'll tell you as we go. I purposely didn't tell Mendoza where Patricia Folsom lives because I want to get there first and take her to safety.
Can't you call her as a Whisperer and warn her?
She wouldn't believe it. And besides, she may have heard that her husband's orders always come from the Whisperer. If she has, she'd spot the double cross in a minute.
Why kidnap her?
Well, Barney Folsom is a killer, hoodlum, and hoppy. Unfortunately, he's a very handsome man. Like most, he's very vain. Last week, he was sent to San Francisco to do a rub-out for the syndicate. He met some little cutie and bungled the job. The little cutie identified him to the police, and so he has to die.
Well, if he stays undercover, won't he be safe?
No. Sooner or later, the police will pick him up. Then he'll be minus one daily ingredient, which he has to have.
Oh. When the craving comes, he'll talk his head off.
Yes, and that's why the syndicate has to kill him before the police find him.
Well, what did his wife do?
Well, she's the only thing Barney Folsom loves more than himself. When word gets around that she's being held, he'll show himself and...
And two more people die.
That's right. Barney deserves anything that comes his way. But I hear that his wife is a pretty regular woman who happens to love the wrong guy. It's happened before.
And it'll happen again. Bill, when are you going to get out of this horrible syndicate?
You know what happens to people who try that.
But you can't fool them forever.
Ellen, I'm in until they discover I double-crossed them or until the people awaken to the danger and wipe it out.
Do you know Mendoza?
No, he's probably from out of town. He seems to know Patricia Folsom, and that makes his job easier. He slips into town, kills her husband and her if necessary, and grabs a train out of town, and 10 hours later he's in Cuba, New York, or even Europe.
Oh, Phil, step on it. I don't want that to happen if we can stop it. Yes?
Mrs. Folsom?
Yes?
I'm Philip Gault, and this is Miss Norris.
Hello, Mrs. Folsom. How do you do? Will you come in?
Thank you.
Please be seated. Now, what can I do for you?
Mrs. Folsom, I'm a lawyer.
Oh, am I in trouble?
I'm afraid you are.
And you're here to help me?
Yes.
I'm sorry you've wasted a trip, Mr. Gault. When I need your services, I will call you.
Close the door, Mrs. Folsom. Unless you want the neighbors to hear how your husband bungled a murder.
That's enough. I don't like the kind of life I lead. I don't like some of the things my husband does. But we're both several rungs above the slimiest creature that crawls on the earth. How much do you want?
Mrs. Folsom, we're not here to blackmail you.
No?
To save your life, if you'll listen.
I'll listen, but I won't answer questions.
All right. Suppose that recently a man, perhaps your husband, Barney Folsom, went out of town.
He did go out of town. His employer sent him on business.
Who was his employer, Mrs. Folsom?
The Cato Insurance Company.
As a lawyer, I happen to know that is a front for a network of organized crime known as the Syndicate.
You seem to know a lot of things, Mr. Gault.
I also know that this man was sent to do murder.
That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard of. Barney's no murderer.
That's beside the point. The Syndicate feels that he bungled the job and therefore has to die.
No. Surely you're wrong, Mr. Gault. Barney doesn't let anyone run over him.
And you know what would happen if the police picked him up and kept him several days in solitary.
But he's tried so hard.
I know. The Syndicate intends to kidnap you and hold you until he tries to rescue you. And then...
That's enough. What do you want me to do?
I want to hide you in a safe place.
Still, my apartment. No one would think of that.
That'll do nicely, Ellen. Then I want to get word through to the underworld for your husband to call a certain telephone number.
You can use mine.
He wouldn't do it. He'd suspect a trap.
Not if you gave Phil some little pet phrase that you call each other. If he heard that, he'd know the message had something to do with you.
Yes, that would do it. You must have a pet phrase we can use.
We do. Of course, it sounds silly to anyone else.
Never mind that. What is the phrase?
Love dumpling.
Love dumpling?
I said it sounds silly when anyone else says it. But to Barney and me, it has a very special meaning.
Can't be helped. We'd better get moving, Mrs. Folsom. Believe me, the danger is very real and possibly very near.
I'll pack some things.
Ellen will loan you what you need. You take my car. I'll meet you later.
What are you going to do?
Stay here and get a look at...
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. Now, don't argue. Get going now.
Phil, I don't want to leave you.
Please, Miss Norris. Let's do as he says. Suddenly, I'm very much afraid.
All right.
I'll call you later.
Hello, Pritchard.
Yes?
I'm looking for a friend of mine.
You must have the wrong apartment.
Wait. Never slam the door in my face.
Do I look like a friend named Patricia?
How do you know her name?
I don't, but you blurted it out when I opened the door.
This is apartment 308.
It is indeed, but I'm not your friend. In fact, the more I see of you, the less I like you. Now break it off before I learn to hate you.
Maybe my friend is inside. I'll look and see. Maybe in the closet, huh?
Do all your friends live in the woodwork?
Schmatzen.
I just moved in today.
You're a schmatzen.
Look, the people I subleased from said they had to leave town in a hurry.
You're still a schmatzen.
What is this schmatzen business?
I'll explain it to you. When you meet one, there's only one cure for a schmatzen. And it goes like this.
Oh, no, you don't. Oh. Next time, forget the schmatzen and pay attention to your judo.
Schmatzen. I got a present for you when I get time.
Yes?
Ellen?
Are you all right?
Except that I'm a schmatzen.
A what?
Schmatzen. I'll tell you all about it later. Let me speak with Mrs. Folsom.
Just a sec. Hello, Mr. Gault.
Mrs. Folsom, where's the best place to drop the word for your husband to contact me?
Sarah Joe's. 16th Street and 54th Place.
Right.
Oh, just a minute. Ellen wants you. Phil, why do you want Barney Folsom to contact you?
To try and convince him that it's safer to give up to the police and face a charge of attempted murder. I think he'll do it to save his wife. Once the police have him, she's safe from the Syndicate. I'll call you in an hour. And what does a man have to do to get a drink in this place?
Keep his tongue civil so he can live long enough to tell me what he wants. There's the list. Prices, too.
Yeah, Panther Punch, 30 cents. Carbolic Cocktail, 40 cents. Mickey Finn on the house. I'll have some Stratton Sour Mash with a jigger of Made in the Morning and soda.
Huh?
You don't have it.
I never even heard of it.
Oh, that's too bad. That's all I drink. But I do parlor tricks.
Yeah, what kind?
Give me a glass of water.
Okay. There.
Now, I take this $50 bill, fold it twice, place it on the bottom of the glass, and drink.
You nuts or something?
Now, with a little help from you, I can make that 50 stick to the bottom of the glass.
No.
And no one but you can get it off.
Well, let's try it. Helping Hand is my middle name.
All right. If Barney Folsom...
Fight down. Pocket your 50 and blow.
Now, let me finish.
Mate, you just did, and I'll beat it before I heave you.
All right, but wrapped in this 50 is a telephone number. If a certain party calls it in 24 hours, the twin to this 50 will be in the mail.
I'm not saying anything, but supposing the gent in question gets a scuppers above water, who would he ask for?
Love dumpling.
What? Love dumpling? Love dumpling. Oh, that's rich. Love dumpling. Joe's place.
Joe, Mendoza, don't say nothing.
Yeah, okay, shoot.
There's a schmutzin at your bar. Tall, wavy hair. Dough written all over him.
Yeah.
I'm telling him. If he asks you questions, give him answers.
Okay.
I'll match anything he gives you.
That's a deal. Where are you?
I'm in your back room. Give me a knock when he flies.
Well, now, matey, what was you saying?
Your attitude changed mighty sudden.
Oh, I've been thinking while I was listening.
Well, pass the word. Just pass the word.
All right, but I got a hunch you just threw away 5 sawbucks.
Joe.
Come in. Well, I haven't seen you in town for more than a year, man.
And you don't see me now.
Right.
Okay, Spill.
He lipped about Barney Folsom.
Barney?
Yeah.
Quick, late on the line. I can't let him get away.
Well, he left me this card in a 50 and promised another half to see if Barney calls Love Dumpling at Crandall 4213.
Give me that card.
Yeah.
Here's a C.
Well, he only gave me 50.
That extra 50 makes up for the one that Schmatzen won't live long enough to give to you.
Who is it?
Phil.
Oh. You're late. I was afraid something had happened.
It took longer than I expected.
Mr. Galt, any news of my husband?
Not unless someone called this number before I got here.
They didn't. I've been thinking about what you said, Mr. Galt, about Barney. If he's what you say he is, I didn't know it.
Well, I have no proof, Mrs. Folsom. Our job is to get him safely to the police, and from there on, it's up to them.
Thank you. I happen to love him.
And that works both ways. If the syndicate wouldn't use you as the bait to draw him out of hiding,
he'd do anything for me. And this time, I wish he wouldn't.
I'll get it. Hello?
Love Dumpling?
No, this is...
Then I'll be right up.
Wait! He hung up.
Was it Barney?
Yes, he said he'd be right up, so he must have called from somewhere in the building.
Are you sure it was Barney Folsom?
Positive. He asked for Love Dumpling.
It's Barney, all right. He's still alive. Oh, Mr. Galt, if we both talk to him, he'll see that it's best to give himself up and throw himself on the mercy of the court. Oh, he's here, safe at last.
Mrs. Folsom, let me...
Barney! Oh, Barney! Oh!
Take it easy. The rest of you get him up.
Mendoza.
That was a bad slip, Schmatzen.
Schmatzen?
I'll explain it to you sometime. Now, how did you know my name?
Well, one time I saw your picture in the paper and I remember...
Oh, I see. Pat, keep your mouth shut and I'll take my hand away. Sorry I'm the one to do this, but if things were reversed, Barney would do the same to me.
Oh, no. Barney's not a killer.
Get wise, Pat. He's no good. Never has been. Never will be. Now, Schmatzen, you've played cute at the apartment. Too cute.
You admire me.
No, you're stupid. I tailed you and you didn't tumble.
From here, I can take it without prompting.
From here on, you'll take it, period. How do you tie into this deal?
I'm a lawyer.
But what do you want with Barney Folsom?
Oh, he's well known and... Well, I thought if he'd give himself up...
You defend him and grab off a slug of cash and a big slice of publicity. You ambulance chasers are all alike. You're all Schmatzens. All right, you want publicity, you will get it. Turn around.
I'm fresh out of tricks. Looks like I do as you say.
Now you're showing your high IQ. You want to see Barney Folsom? Okay. I'll just make sure you'll be here when he phones.
Phil! Oh, no! Oh, you've killed him.
I assure you it was purely intentional. Now, girls, take your last look at the body. You won't be seeing much of him anymore. Or, for that matter, anyone else.
You are listening to The Whisperer, the story of Philip Galt, who skirts the thin edges of death, living his dual role. The Whisperer has ordered Mendoza to kidnap Patricia Folsom and hold her captive. If she attempts to escape, Mendoza is to kill her. In his real identity of Philip Galt, Phil is trying to help Patricia. But Mendoza learns of his plans and strikes him on the head with the butt of his pistol. Taking Ellen and Patricia with him, Mendoza forces them to enter his car. Meanwhile, in Ellen's apartment, an hour passes. Phil still lies without movement. A second hour, and then a third hour passes. And the door of the apartment is stealthily opened, and a man enters. Patiently, he sits, waiting for the first sign of life.
All right, snap out of it. I said snap out of it.
Who are you?
You sent for me, you ought to know.
Folsom?
Yeah. Now tell me what you've done with Pat or I'll cave in every rib you own.
I don't know where
she... Don't give me that!
You do that again and you'll never find her.
I'll do it several times and you'll be glad to talk. Where'd you learn our pet name?
She told me. I'm Phil Galt, a lawyer. I heard the syndicate was going to kidnap her.
So I'd come out of hiding where they could rub me out, huh? All right, go on.
I sent her here, but Mendoza...
Mendoza? He's doing a job?
Yes.
He always liked Pat, but he'd kill her without batting an eye. Who's this friend you mentioned?
Ellen Norris. After Mendoza tapped me, he must have taken her, too.
Oh, that gives you a stake in this.
Yes.
All right, any ideas?
I can find where they're being held, but I'll have to make a call in private.
No, so.
You'll have to trust me.
Why should I? I'll give Joe a ring and find out myself. Joe knows me. I can trust him. Douse your head under that water cooler. You don't look so good.
Yeah.
Oh. Easy. You're no good if you're out on your feet.
Joe's place. Sailor Joe speaking.
Joe.
Barney?
Yeah. I got your message through the grapevine.
Where are you?
Dame's apartment. Friend in the telephone company tipped me to the address.
You get Mendoza?
No, he's got Pat. Where are they holding her?
They ain't tipped it yet, not till the trap is ready for you.
All right, I'll stay here till you call me.
Good.
Any luck?
None. Look, Galt, I've got no choice but to trust you. I'll wait outside the door, but don't try anything.
I won't. Ellen's involved in this, too. Operator, get me Circle 1798, New York City. I'll wait. Thank you.
Go ahead.
Central City.
Go ahead, Central City.
Mendoza has completed first part of assignment. I have been contacted by Barney Folsom. Where is his wife being held?
In the Maida Mist Flower Warehouse at 9th and Grace. Do not give Folsom this information for 1 hour. We'll be ready for him by that time.
Girl?
Yes.
Where is she?
In the Maida Mist Flower Warehouse on 9th and Grace.
All right, give me that phone. I know that joint. Offices in the front and a warehouse in the back. Yeah.
Joe's place. Sailor Joe speaking.
Joe, listen. I know where they're holding Pat.
Where?
I'm not saying yet. I need your help.
Just keep me clean. I'm your boy.
All right. Can you lay hands on a pulley that doesn't squeak and 150 feet of rope?
The pulley, yeah. The rope, no. But I got 60 feet in the back room.
All right, I'll make that do. Grab the rope and pulley and meet me at the corner of Marquette and Alvarado in half an hour. You're going with me.
I'll have the gear there, but going with you, I ain't.
All right, half an hour.
Feeling any better, Gold?
Yeah, a little.
All right, come on. I got a car downstairs. It's going to take both of us to get the girls out of that flower warehouse. Marquette and Alvarado Street.
And there's Joe.
Good. He brought the gear. Joe'll do anything for money, as long as it's safe. And this is safe, the way I'll play it. Stowed in the back seat, Joe.
Yeah. This is heavy.
All right, now get in.
Hey, but I told you...
And I told you, get in.
Don't shoot.
I won't. You won't get hurt.
Well...
Joe?
Yeah?
Can you still climb a 50-foot rope hand over hand?
Might not get up, but I can go down it.
If you can, there's a sea in it for you.
Balsam, you're beginning to sound like Buck Rogers.
Wish I had his ray gun. I could use it about now.
Are you familiar with this warehouse?
Every inch. They'll hold the girls in the front part in one of the offices. They'll expect me from the front.
You have a different entrance picked out?
Sure.
What's with the rope and pulley?
The roof. They're watching the front. We surprise them from the rear.
But a 60-foot rope and a 50-foot roof? For that, you need 100 feet of rope.
You should have studied engineering instead of law. It's a matter of balance and counterbalance.
Oh.
Beginning to get the picture, Gold?
Yes, yes. How many sacks of flour equal a little less than my weight?
Smart boy. Now, it's too bad I met you so late in your life.
A few minutes later, the black sedan parked in the dark of the warehouse. Three figures stole silently toward the back of the towering structure. Cautiously, they merged in the shadows and then began their ascent of the ladder which led to the roof. Careful prying in the skylight opened was quickly put aside. Across the huge beams, the pulley was fastened and the rope fed through it until one end rested on the dim floor of the warehouse.
She's down.
I tied a big knot in this end. Can't possibly slip through. Here, feel.
Yeah, that'll hold.
All right. Now let yourself down hand over hand. At the bottom, tie the slack around four 100-pound sacks of flour.
Does he know which sacks are 100 pounds?
One, I loaded a million pounds of flour. That's why I took up barkeeping.
All right, in you go, Joe. Now take it easy. Give a tug when you're ready.
Yeah, I got you. Don't you make no noise while I'm down there.
Don't worry, we won't.
You may be wrong in your weights, Folsom. I weigh 195.
I tip at 215. With 400 pounds on the other end, we'll have 10 pounds advantage. That ought to let us down slow enough.
Would have been easier to let me go down hand over hand.
I'm taking no chances on you, Galt. We go down together. Here's the tug.
I hope he has 400 pounds on the other end of this rope. If he doesn't, we'll take a fast trip to the floor.
There's only one way to find out. All right, get a hold of the rope. And no funny business. Ready?
All set.
All right. Here I come.
Are we going down awfully fast?
It's too late to worry about that now.
Can't judge the distance.
All right, we're down. Don't turn loose.
Why, you think I'm crazy? That 400 pounds of flour would land right on our heads.
Joe?
Right here.
Well, I couldn't see in the dark. All right, find something to snub the rope to.
Gotcha. Doesn't seem to be anything.
We can't hang on here all night. You find something?
Yeah, the bin wall is top for the 6 places.
Tie it good.
Yeah, I'm using a slip knot. Might want to get out in a hurry.
Will a slip knot hold 400 pounds at the top?
This one will. There. All right, you can turn loose now. When you want to go up, you just pull on the tag end, and that's all there is.
All right. Here's your C. When the shooting starts, slip out that side door and get lost.
Gotcha.
Till then, keep quiet.
Hands beginning to cramp.
All right, Galt. Now, from here on, no talking. You understand? We'll work our way through the warehouse into the offices. All right, touch my shoulder and follow me.
This section is dark.
Shh.
We'll try the next one. Folsom.
Yeah?
There's a light under that door. Look, Galt. I can't let you have the gun, but I'm going in there. If I go down, make your play.
That light's too obvious. Let's try something.
What?
There ought to be a light switch in this corridor.
Yeah. There is. Right here.
You stay here. I'll break through that door. One will get you 500. The girls are in there, and Mendoza and the others will become swarming out of the dark rooms.
That's worth a try. If you're wrong, it's your neck.
I'll risk it. When I snap out the room light, flip this one on in the hall. That aim.
Go ahead.
I'll make enough noise to let them know I'm here.
Ellen!
Phil, it's a trick.
Turn around, Bonnie. It's all yours.
No!
No!
Wrong boy, Mendoza.
Go. But where's Bonnie?
I'm behind you, Mendoza.
Turn off that light. Mickey, Bruno, he's in here!
Phil, get a gun.
I've got it.
There are two men outside.
I hear them. There we are, Pat. As soon as they run that corner. Try again, Mickey.
Bonnie. Oh, Bonnie.
It's all right. It's all over, Pat. Bruno got me in the shoulder, but I got him dead center. All right, you can come out now.
Phil, are you all right?
Not a scratch. All right, Galt. Drop it.
Oh, no.
Sorry, Galt. I hate to do this. But...
Bonnie, he saved my life.
I know, but it's him or me. He knows too much.
You can give yourself up and be safe.
I'll never be safe. I'll have a better chance with him gone, though. All right, come on. Move back down that hall.
Bonnie, I've never believed all the things they said about you.
Quiet, Pat.
I've never believed them, Bonnie. Please. Please don't make them come true.
Keep moving.
Folsom, you're not in over your head yet. All they can prove is attempted manslaughter. That may mean a few years, but this means the hot seat.
Turn left out in the warehouse.
He's right, Bonnie. Give yourself up. I'll wait for you.
Snap on those lights, Cole.
Phil, what's he going to do?
Look up at the roof, dangling on the end of that rope.
They look like bags of flour.
400 pounds of flour to the ounce.
But I don't understand.
See that rope snubbed to the cribbing on the floor? Put a loop around my neck, pull that slip knot, and I'll break my neck against the roof.
Bonnie, you wouldn't do that.
I got to. But that's far enough. Stand right there. Pat, there's a noose in the end of that slack rope. Put it around their necks.
Leave Ellen out of this.
No. Bonnie, you can't do this.
Do as I say! That flower will give you a quick trip up to eternity, Gorg.
Bonnie, I can't.
Oh, then give it to me and I'll do it.
You're really going through with this.
What do you think? All right, toss me the rope.
Mr. Galt?
Yes?
I'm tossing him the rope.
You fool, not over my head.
Thanks for the warning.
Yes! Pat, no! Don't do it!
How awful.
It was what he planned for us, Ellen.
But how did the rope come untied?
It was a slip knot, Ellen. Somewhere, I don't know how, it accidentally came loose.
No, Mr. Galt. I untied it.
Come on, Ellen. Let's get her down to the police station where she'll be safe.
Phil, ages ago, before this horrible day was half over, you mentioned that you were a schmutzen.
Huh? Oh, so I did, Ellen. So I did.
Well, what is a schmutzen?
Well, when you find a schmutzen, according to Mendoza, there's only one way to treat it. Here, stand up and I'll show you.
All right.
First, you seize the schmutzen firmly here and here, and then you... Oh! Hey! Oh! Oh! Oh!
Oh, Phil, I didn't mean to hurt you. Oh, you poor lamb. Well, you got a nasty bump on your forehead. Oh, let Ellen kiss it off. Mr. Galt.
You like that?
Very much. Let's do it again.
Oh, no.
Oh, darn. Let it ring.
I can't. That's my private line to the syndicate. Now, shh.
Central City.
Where have you been, Central City? We've been trying to reach you for more than an hour.
I was away on business.
Your only business is the syndicate. You slipped up on this, Central City. Mendoza and Folsom were both killed less than an hour ago.
I know that. The police are holding Patricia Folsom in protective custody.
We have no further interest in her. But a word of warning to you. Watch yourself. Your district is becoming a headache.
I'll try and do better.
See that you do. For further instructions, call Dallas at midnight.
Dallas at midnight.
The Whisperer, starring Carlton Young, is based upon characters created by Stetson Humphrey, and any similarity to persons living or dead is purely coincidental. Betty Moran plays Ellen. Others in the cast were Edith Tackner, Paul Frees, Harry Gardino, and Larry Dobkin. Today, The Whisperer was written, produced, and directed by Bill Karn. Original music by Johnny Duffy. This is Don Rickles inviting you to join us again next Sunday for another adventure with...
The Whisperer!
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
And now, stay tuned for the mystery program that is unique among all mystery programs. Because even when you know who's guilty, you always receive a startling surprise at the final curtain. In the Signal Oil program, The Whistler.
S-I-T-N-A-L.
Signal gasoline.
Signal, the famous Go Farther gasoline, invites you to sit back and enjoy another strange story by The Whistler. For extra driving pleasure, the signal to look for is the yellow and black circle sign that identifies Signal service stations from Canada to Mexico. And for Sunday evening listening pleasure, the signal to listen for is this whistle that identifies the Signal Oil program, The Whistler.
I am the Whistler, and I know many things, for I walk by night. I know many strange tales hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. Yes, I know the nameless terrors of which they dare not speak.
And now for the Signal Oil Company, the Whistler's strange story, The Oriana Affair.
It was quiet at 3 a.m, very quiet. Only the soft lapping of the water of Viewport Bay against the sides of the yacht Oriana. Nothing more. Only the nervous breathing of the man with the knife, Ralph Fenton. There was no such sound from his victim, the man on the floor of the cabin. No, the knife had stopped that, and still Jim Gunther forever. Ralph Fenton, standing over Gunther's body, turned suddenly, reached for his overcoat and his hat. Glanced around the cabin, hurried up the companionway, and then stepped down the gangplank, tossing his knife into the water as he hurried ashore. It's in the papers the following morning. Pleasant reading for you, isn't it, Ralph? You feel safe and secure as you dress, have breakfast, and go downtown to the office. Because of Gunther's position, everyone is talking about the case, and you join in, naturally, confidently, and discussing it blandly with Edna Sloan, the district attorney's secretary.
Well, quite frankly, Edna, I think Gunther had it coming. You know, a political pressure man pulling strings, making the puppets jump to hold their jobs. I say we're better off without him.
He even threatened to frame you once, didn't he, Ralph?
Oh, not seriously. As assistant to the district attorney, well, I'm a small-time target, Edna. So Gunther concentrated on bigger game.
Like, maybe the district attorney himself?
Mm-hmm, could be. Hey, speaking of the boss, what did he have to say about it?
Mr. Ainsley's still having his say. He's with Lieutenant Reese in his office. They're questioning a suspect, Tony Ferracci.
Ferracci, huh? Well, they're working fast. I think I'll run across the hall and give a listen.
Oh, I'd take it easy, Ralph. Mr. Ainsley wastes very little love on you.
It's mutual. I'll save all mine for you.
Oh, sure.
See ya. Morning, Chief.
Hmm? Oh, Fenton.
Well, didn't expect to find you alone. Edna was telling me that
yes,
you
had... Yes, I had to let Ferracci go.
Oh, alibi, huh? So another suspect bites the dust.
I'm not worried. A murderer always makes one mistake. Lieutenant Reese?
Yeah, Chief?
That girl out there in the reception room, did she get a look at Ferracci on his way out?
She did. He's not the one.
All right. Bring Miss Robbins in, will you? I want to talk to her.
Right.
Who's this, Miss Robbins?
A witness. She saw the killer leaving Gunther's yacht last night.
She what?
Says she can point out the man to us if she ever sees him again.
This way,
way, Miss Robinson.
Chief, you don't mind, I've got some things to do.
Stick around, Fenton. I want you in on this interview. You're going to work on this case.
Want to see me, Mr. Ainsley?
Yes, Miss Robbins, we do. Won't you come in?
Tonight's $20 Signal gasoline book goes to Mrs. Frederick Davis of Glendale, California, for this limerick. A frugal young lad from this city spent so much on his car, 'twas a pity. He tried Signal one day, now he's saving his pay, and his car purrs as smooth as a kitty.
Signal, Signal, Signal gasoline. Your car will go far, will go for the gasoline.
Our congratulations to Mrs. Davis for her clever way of describing the good mileage you enjoy with Signal, the famous Go Farther gasoline. Too bad a limerick isn't long enough to include all the benefits you notice when you switch to Signal. I mean Signal's quick cold weather starting, Signal's peppy pickup, Signal's smooth responsive power. For it's a fact, mileage and performance go hand in hand. To enjoy both, fill up with Signal, the famous Go Farther gasoline.
It's a shock, isn't it, Ralph? You were so certain that you left the yacht Oriana unseen after killing Jim Gunther. And you were sure that as assistant district attorney, you would be able to follow every step of the investigation so no one could surprise you. And now, in District Attorney Ainsley's office, you're confronted with the startling information that there was a witness. Someone who saw a man hurry down the gangplank. Someone who can identify Gunther's murderer. She's here in the district attorney's office, a Miss Paula Robbins. You're trembling, aren't you, Ralph? You want to run, but you can't. You look away as Miss Robbins enters and try to edge over to the window and keep your face averted from a direct view.
Just sit down, won't you, Miss Robbins?
Thank you.
Now, Miss Robbins, about Faraci. You're certain?
Oh, yes.
And he's not...
He's not your man, no.
Now, you're positive, of course, that you could make the identification.
Why?
Well, that will be most helpful to us. You know that.
Yes, I know. Is this another suspect?
No, I'm sorry. Miss Robbins, this is Ralph Fenton, one of my assistants.
Oh, I see. How do you do, Mr. Fenton?
Miss Robbins?
Now, as I was saying, Miss Robbins, I... Miss Robbins...
What? Oh, sorry. I was thinking of something else, Mr. Ainsley.
She looks straight at you, doesn't she, Ralph? Almost through you in a glance that's penetrating, appraising. Then she smiles, turns away, and says nothing. But you're certain there was recognition in her eyes. Yet she didn't say a word. Why, you ask yourself. Why, Ralph? Why? Later that morning, in a tiny cafe across from the city hall, you sit in a corner booth having coffee with Edna Sloan, the DA's secretary. You learn a little more about Miss Robbins, don't you? Not much, but a little.
Oh, yes, Mr. Ainsley's counting pretty heavily on Paula Robbins.
But how does he know that she was even around, Edna? Now, what would a girl like that be doing around the yacht at 3 o'clock in the morning?
She owns a boat, not a very big one, lives on it, ties up not far from the Oriana. She was coming in late last night, or early, take your pick. She'd been over to Catalina.
Oh, I see.
She had just brought her boat in, had tied up, when she saw the murderer run ashore, and... Speaking of the devil...
What?
She's over there by the door playing the pinball machine.
Yeah. Yeah, so she is. Let's go, Edna, huh? I gotta get back.
Oh, hello, Mr. Fenton.
Oh, Miss Robbins.
And Miss, Sloan, isn't it?
That's right. Hello.
Well, what do you know? Look at this. Don't you think I'm a lucky girl, Mr. Fenton? I've hit the jackpot.
Oh, so you have.
Yes. You must have brought me luck. If I saw you often enough, I'll bet I'd hit the jackpot lots of times, don't you think?
Well, Ralph, there it is, out in the open. Her answer, her reason. You no longer have to wonder why Paula Robbins didn't identify you in District Attorney Ainsley's office. Her silence will cost something, won't it, Ralph? Yes. And from the look in her eyes as she faces you, it might cost a great deal. You stare at the girl for a moment. The expression in her eyes, the faint, curious smile on her lips. She knows, doesn't she, Ralph? Yes. She saw you leave Gunther's yacht last night. Yet back there in the office, she didn't identify you as Gunther's killer, and you wonder why. The rest of the morning, you debate about driving down to the docks to see Paula and talk with her. But you can't make up your mind what to do. Late that afternoon, the district attorney does it for you. He sends you back to the scene of the crime, Gunther's yacht, with Lieutenant Reese on a routine matter. As the two of you reach the pier, you see Paula Robbins aboard a small boat, docked not far away from Gunther's yacht. You tell the lieutenant to go on ahead, and then you hurry toward the girl.
Hello. Hello there.
Hi.
Mind if I come aboard?
Come in.
Nice little job you've got here.
I like it. I've been expecting you, Mr. Benton.
Oh, really?
Yes. We both know who killed Gunther, don't we?
Afraid I don't follow it.
Oh, of course you do. You know I saw you leave the yacht last night.
Oh, you're mistaken.
Matter of fact, I've seen you many times before, visiting Gunther.
Well, official business. He was always in trouble.
On the contrary, he was never in trouble. As long as he had a boy in the DA's office, you.
You seem to know an awful lot, Miss Robbins.
You got to be quite friendly with Jim Gunther. He used to brag about some of those fast deals he was pulling. I knew he couldn't do it alone. Had to have help from the right places, so I put two and two together.
All right, Paula. What do you want? If it's money,
Money? I'm not interested in your money, Ralph.
What?
I already have a nice bank account. And a steady income.
Well, then what do you want?
Well, let's say your friendship. Yeah, that's it. Your loyalty. Devotion.
I don't understand.
It's quite simple. A girl like me never knows when she'll need a friend in the DA's office. I think we should get better acquainted. Real soon.
Morning, Mr. Fenton.
Morning, Sergeant. Got a little job for you.
Oh, sure.
Check with the Motor Vehicle Bureau. Driver's license made out to Paula Robbins. I'm interested in the fingerprints.
Right.
Hello.
Hello, Ralph. Paula. Spending a quiet evening at home, are you?
Well, yes, I'd planned to.
I was sort of expecting you at the dock today.
Well, I've been rather busy the past few days.
Yes. The Gunther case. How's it going?
So-so. No new developments.
I didn't think there would be. Ralph, it's such a lovely evening, and I'm bored. Why don't you drive down here? Take me to dinner.
Well, fine. I'll drive by the boat and pick up in an hour or so.
My, my. I would never imagine that an assistant district attorney would dance so well.
Thanks.
By the way, how do you like it here?
Very smart club.
I like expensive places. One meets such interesting people. And speaking of interesting people...
See someone you know?
Over there, sitting alone. Bruce Engels.
Well, well.
Know him?
Know of him. Polo ponies, speedboats, a lot of money.
His wife has all the money. She's a charming girl.
Oh.
Bruce has a good thing there. Let's go over, shall we?
All right.
I think you'll enjoy meeting Bruce. Hello, Bruce.
What? Oh, Paula.
Don't get up, darling. This is Mr. Fenton. Mr. Engels.
Mr. Fenton.
How do you do, Mr. Engels?
Mr. Fenton is our assistant district attorney, Bruce.
The
Assistant District Attorney?
Yes. He's a friend of mine. Isn't that nice?
Yeah. That's real nice.
I think so. Well, Bruce, give my regards to Della. And do drop by the boat. See me soon, won't you?
I'll do that, Paula. Good night, Mr. Fenton.
Good night. He doesn't look very happy.
Bruce has a lot on his mind. His wife. He'd hate to lose her.
Is he in danger of losing her?
She ever found out how he spent some of her money, well, she wouldn't like it.
Uh-huh. Let's have a drink before we go back to the dance floor, huh?
All right.
Paula, is Bruce Engels that steady income you mentioned to me the other day?
What makes you think that, darling?
I checked up on you, sweetheart. New Orleans police informed me that you've done a little time. Blackmail, a 3-year rap.
That's right.
Uh-huh. But you didn't serve out your full term. You were released after 1 year. 1 year.
You see what I mean, darling? About having friends in the right places. In New Orleans. As well as here.
A clever young woman, isn't she, Ralph? And it's obvious, quite obvious now, why your friendship is so valuable to her. In the weeks that follow, you see her frequently. There are more dinner dates, nights at the theater, boat rides along the moonlit waters of the California coast. And then one morning, the district attorney drops into your office. He holds a letter in his hand.
Fenton, the New Orleans police just sent some additional information on Paula Robbins. I wasn't aware of the fact that our office was investigating her.
Oh, well, I just thought it might be a good idea.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was, Fenton. So, Miss Robbins was sent up for blackmail, eh? It's very interesting, very. And according to this report, she's picked up in other cities several times. Released. Lack of evidence. Seems to me blackmail is quite a business with Miss Robbins.
All right. What do you want me to do?
Nothing. I'll handle this matter from now on.
Oh, now look, just because the girl has got a
record...
All
right. If she's clean, she won't get hurt. But I'm going to check up on the girl just the same. You never can tell what might come of it. Eh, Fenton?
You're thankful, aren't you, Ralph, that Paula is out of the district attorney's reach for the time being, at least. On a 3-day cruise off the coast of Lower California. And she won't be back till Saturday. You tell yourself you'll have to watch the district attorney closely in the days that follow. And be on hand at the docks to warn Paula when she returns from her trip. And then, Saturday morning, as you arrive at the office, you're relieved to learn that the district attorney has already left for his lodge in the mountains to spend the weekend. Later in the afternoon, as you're about to leave, Edna, the district attorney's secretary, calls you.
What is it, sweetheart?
The boss just phoned in from his lodge. He wants you to bring this up to him right away. The Gunther file.
Me? Oh, now look,
Edna.
That's
what he said. He wants you.
All right. All right.
It's a 2-hour drive up to the district attorney's lodge. An isolated spot in the wild mountain region east of the city. And you arrive there shortly before dark. You're curious, aren't you, Ralph, and wonder why he wanted you to come up with a Gunther file. It all becomes quite clear to you a few moments later.
I've had Lieutenant Reese checking the movements of the Robbins girl back to the night of the murder, Fenton. He's given me a complete report.
I see.
You've been very friendly. Been seeing quite a bit of the girl, haven't you?
I suppose. She's rather attractive.
She's a convicted blackmailer. And I have a hunch she's still working at it.
What do you mean, Chief?
Like I said, it's just a hunch. But she might be blackmailing Gunther's killer.
Well, you have no evidence, of course.
I've had her bank account checked. She's deposited several large sums of money in that account. 2 very heavy deposits have been made since the Gunther killing.
Uh-huh. So, what are we going to do?
I don't know yet. I want to check the Gunther files again. I want to think about Miss Robbins some more. But I have an idea I'll have her picked up.
Ever picked up? On what grounds?
Well, maybe Miss Robbins frightens easily. Maybe when she's faced with a murder rap, she'll open up.
Murder? Oh, now look, Chief, you know she couldn't have killed Gunther.
That's right, that's right. A woman couldn't have done the job. But I want Gunther's killer, Fenton, and I think Paula Robbins knows who he is.
Really?
Yeah, but I want to be sure before I make a move. I want to think it over very carefully.
Oh, of course. I sure don't blame you.
And in the meantime, Fenton, here's some advice. Stay away from Paula Robbins, understand? Let me handle it.
As you leave the lodge, get into your car and start down the road to the main highway. You're certain you know what the district attorney will do, aren't you, Ralph? In a matter of hours, after he's thought it all over, he'll call headquarters and give the order to have Paula picked up. And there's no way you can reach her in Warner. But you know there must be some way you could prevent the district attorney from making that phone call. Suddenly, an idea strikes you. Stop the car, and then turn your spotlight on the trees that line the road. The light plays along the phone line strung from tree to tree up to the lodge. There is a way you can prevent the district attorney from making that call, isn't there? Yes. And it doesn't take you long to rip out the telephone wires and disconnect the service to the lodge. It's almost 10 o'clock when you arrive at the docks and hurry aboard Paula's boat.
Who's there?
Ralph. Got to talk to you, Paula. DA's getting smart. Very smart. Knows about your record. He's checked your bank account.
So?
I'm not sure, but he's liable to have you picked up. That order won't come through for a while yet. I took care of that.
What do you mean?
He's up at his lodge in the mountains. I ripped down the phone lines. Got to get out of here.
Why?
He's going to try to hang a murder rap on you, that's why.
So you want me to run? With every cop in the country looking for me. No, thanks. I'll stick around. He doesn't have a thing on me.
Look, he can make it real rough for you. You don't know the DA like I do. When he gets through with you...
Are you afraid I'll talk, Ralph? Tell all?
Listen, Paula...
Don't worry. I won't breathe a word.
I tell you, Paula, you don't know the DA.
And you don't know little Paula. He won't make me talk.
I wish I could believe you, Paula. But I've got to be sure. My career, my whole life is in your hands.
Wait a minute. What's the...
I'm sorry, Paula, but I can't take the chance.
Ralph, no!
It's all over suddenly, isn't it, Ralph? And Paula is dead. You slip quietly out of the cabin, make your way in the darkness along the deck, and then...
Miss Paula, is that you, Miss Paula?
You stop in your tracks, recognize the voice. It's the old man who hangs around the docks. As he comes toward you...
Hey there! Hey!
You whirl, race around to the other side of the boat, slip into the water. Hiding under the pier, you wait for a chance to escape. In a few moments, the docks become alive with people and excited voices. The old man has discovered Paula's body and you're trapped. Yes, the police are right on the job. And as your body numbs with the cold water, you realize that you're no longer the assistant district attorney hunting the criminal. You're the one that's being hunted. You realize that you can't stay here any longer, and you start swimming as quietly as you can to the pier several hundred feet away. And then, as you reach it and start up the ladder...
Hey, hey, look over there! Officer! Officer!
What is it?
On the pier, across the way. A man going up the ladder.
Hey, you, stop. Stop where you are.
You've gotten away safely again, haven't you, Ralph? You slide in behind the wheel of your car. In the distance, you can hear the excitement, the confusion. They've lost you in the night.
So long, gentlemen. Better luck next time.
You've heard me talk about the more thorough, more conscientious service that cars get at signal stations because signal dealers are in business for themselves and have a personal interest in pleasing you. Well, typical of this are the extras you enjoy when you have your car lubricated at a signal service station. First of all, signal dealers don't take any chance on memory when it comes to the many lubrication points on your car. Instead, they check against Signal's factory-recommended lubrication chart, which clearly shows every part. Then they use 9 specialized Signal oils and greases, so each part will get the exact type of protection it needs. And finally, just to make doubly sure not a single part has been overlooked, they check each part again, which is why it's called Signal Double Check Lubrication. Now, that's the kind of lube job you want if your car is to give you the long, trouble-free miles that were built into it. And that's the kind of lubrication you get from friendly, independent Signal dealers.
A miraculous escape, wasn't it, Ralph? And you're certain that no one will be able to identify you as Paula Robbins' killer. Yes, Paula is dead now. And she'll never be able to tell the district attorney that she saw you leave Gunther's yacht the night he was killed. You're in the clear now on both counts, and you congratulate yourself as you race back to your apartment. Once there, you slip up the back stairs unseen, and as you reach your door, unlock it. You notice the smear of red paint on your coat sleeve. You probably got it from Paula's boat. You'll have to get rid of that coat, won't you? Get out of your wet clothes. You're not worried in the least, are you? Even if the district attorney should suspect you, and you're almost certain he will, it will be impossible to prove that you were involved in Paula's death. You push the door open and then stop. The lights are on in your apartment.
Hello, Mr. Fenton. Am I glad to see you?
Lieutenant Reese, what are you doing here?
The apartment manager let me in. I told her it was important. Somebody bumped off Paula Robbins. The killer got away by swimming across the... Your clothes, Mr. Fenton, they're wet.
Oh, well, I...
What's this smeared on your coat? It looks like paint.
Oh, that's nothing.
Wait a minute. I think you ought to know we got word that the killer smeared himself with paint getting away. Maybe the district attorney had something when he was worrying about you running around with Paula Robbins.
I ran around with Paula Robbins.
Now, there may be another guy loose around town with wet clothes and paint smeared on him, but I doubt it. I'm going to have to hold you for the killing of Paula Robbins.
Why? Why did you have to come here, Reese?
Well, when I heard that the Robbins girl had been murdered, I figured someone at the DA's office ought to know about it. I wouldn't have come here, Fenton, if I could have reached the DA himself. But when I tried to get a call to him at the lodge, I couldn't get through. The operator said the telephone line to his lodge was down. Too bad for you.
Let that whistle be your signal for the Signal Oil program, The Whistler, each Sunday night at this same time. Brought to you by the Signal Oil Company, marketers of Signal gasoline and motor oil, and fine automotive accessories. Remember, if you would like the fun of having your friends hear a limerick of yours on The Whistler, the address to which to send it is the Signal Oil Company, Los Angeles, 55, California. All limericks become the property of the Signal Oil Company. Those selected for use on The Whistler will be chosen by our advertising representatives on the basis of humor, suitability, and originality. So, of course, they must be your own composition. Featured in tonight's story were Bill Foreman, Tom Brown, and Virginia Gregg. The Whistler was produced and directed by George W. Allen, with story by Adrian John Doe, music by Wilbur Hatch, and was transmitted to our troops overseas by the Armed Forces Radio Service. The Whistler is entirely fictional, and any characters portrayed on The Whistler are also fictional. Any similarity or names or resemblances to persons living or dead is purely coincidental. Remember, at this same time next Sunday, another strange tale by The Whistler.
S-I-T-N-A-L
Signal.
Signal gasoline.
This is Marvin Miller speaking for the Signal Oil Company. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That's it for this week. I hope you enjoyed our selections this time. You can find more from The Whisperer, The Whistler,
and thousands of other old-time radio episodes at relicradio.com. You'll also find all the other podcasts there and our Shoutcast stream. There's plenty to listen to, all for free, thanks to your support. If you'd like to help this and all of the shows, visit donate.relicradio.com or click on the donate link on the website. Thank you, as always, to those who have helped out. Thanks for joining me today. I'll be back next Tuesday with another hour of the Relic Radio Show.